Program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Bruce, and for the next hour I'll be reading from the Thursday, December 4th, 2025 issue of the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. One of the top stories with a big picture of a building on fire is Night Fire in Batavia, Flames and Smoke Ravage Pike Road Residence, article by Brian Quinn. Investigation continued Wednesday into a three-alarm blaze which gutted a house at 3589 Pike Road. Intense flames moved quickly through the structure, with the initial call to dispatchers arriving around 6:18 p.m. Tuesday. Multiple area fire departments responded. The first firefighters at the scene saw a large amount of fire on the home's left side and roof, said Coordinator Tim Yeager of the Genesee County Office of Emergency Management. A second alarm was called with additional third alarm units. Initially, the firefighters conducted an interior attack on the fire, then transitioned to large caliber streams for the exterior of the home due to the large amount of fire, Yeager said. There was a large amount of fire damage to sections of the home, smoke and water damage throughout most of the home. Firefighters were performing salvage operations in portions of the home that were safe to do so. He said the nearest hydrant was about 900 feet from the home, and large diameter supply lines were used to supply the fire trucks at the scene. The house belonged to Andrew Young. Nobody was home at the time, and a firefighter was treated at the scene for a minor injury by Mercy EMS. Firefighters worked for several hours amid a biting winter chill, along with large amounts of smoke and flame. A ladder truck sprayed large amounts of water onto the structure from above. Temperatures were in the teens and 20s during the response. Fire departments responding to the scene, including Town of Batavia, City of Batavia, Alexander, East Pembroke, Darien, Bergen, and Pavilion on scene. City of Batavia and Stafford were covering the Town of Batavia district during the fire. Mercy EMS was on the scene. The fire rekindled Wednesday afternoon at the location, with firefighters reporting visible flames. The rekindling itself generated a significant response, with the Town of Batavia, Alexander, East Pembroke, and Oakfield fire departments responding to the scene. Further details weren't immediately available as of press time Wednesday evening. Genesee and Orleans Way Mental Health Platform, Credible Mind, could provide 24/7 assistance. Article by Brian Quinn. Genesee and Orleans counties are considering using a digital platform to help residents to improve their mental health. Credible Mind of Sausalito, California, would provide a digital platform for residents to engage in mental health wellness activities, such as self-care and smart screen solutions and other tools to meet the mental health needs of communities. It is a team of designers, data scientists, behaviorists, content creators, and clinicians. It's always good to improve mental health in our communities. We're just giving another option for folks, Director of Community Health Services and Deputy Public Health Director Brendan Bedard said after leaving Monday's meeting with the Genesee County Human Services Committee. The Credible Mind website is at CredibleMind.com. It's a website, so they could go on 24/7. It's self-help, Bedard said. They give evidence-based programs or videos, podcasts. It actually tailors to what that person might need at that time. Bedard said Credible Mind is something people could take advantage of in both Genesee and Orleans counties. The proposal is for each county to split an implementation fee, an annual license fee of $17,000. Genesee County has $8,500 in its 2026 public health budget. Bedard said there are over 20,000 pieces of information on the site. Genesee County's online Credible Mind account is not set up, Bedard said. We have to wait until legislative approval. Once we get that up and running, we'll have public information, he said. It's going to take a little bit of time for it to get set up, too, on that website. Once you set up an account, you indicate what's going on in your life. You can try these self-help guidelines just to improve mental health. Orleans County Chief Administrative Officer John Welch Jr. said there will be a proposed agreement between the legislature at its December 16th meeting. This is another outreach for our residents regarding mental health, Welch said. A rural county needs as many opportunities as possible to offer mental health services. In addition to our mental health department, which provides clinical services at our main site, as well as offering satellite locations throughout the county. Genesee and Orleans Public Health Department's Director of Health Promotion and Public Information Officer, Caitlin Petine, said once the proposals are approved, the health departments will collaborate directly with Credible Minds to configure the platform and tailor it to the needs of Genesee and Orleans counties. After this process is complete, we will launch the platform and promote it through a press release, informational materials, community partners, and other channels, she said. Environmental advocates want state law to encourage electric yard equipment. Article by Alex Galt. According to an estimate drawn up by environmental advocates, gas-powered lawn equipment could be producing as much greenhouse gas emissions as 300,000 cars per year in New York alone, while also producing a lot more noise pollution. That's why a handful of groups and state lawmakers are hoping to push New York to adopt a new program that incentivizes landscaping companies, the primary users of gas-powered lawn implements, to make the switch to electric machinery. On Tuesday, the New York Public Interest Research Group, Environment America, said Senator Elizabeth Lidge Krueger, Democrat from Manhattan, and Assemblyman Stephen Otis, Democrat from Rye, renewed their joint push to pass an electric landscaping rebate program. Under their bill, commercial landscapers doing business and paying taxes in New York could apply for a one-time tax rebate to purchase electric lawn equipment to replace gas-powered machines. The details would be left to the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, which would set the total rebate amount and eligibility requirements. The rebate would expire in 2036 if enacted. Environmental advocates say now is the time to push as many sectors as possible to electrification. They have pointed to a study recently completed by the New York Public Interest Research Group and Environment America that shows how significant the pollution is. Unsurprisingly, counties with large populations had higher emissions recorded than more rural counties, but the most suburban counties in the state fared far worse than the most urbanized in New York City. The top three counties for emissions were Suffolk, Westchester, and Nassau. Gas lawn implements in Suffolk County were estimated to put out as much pollution as 52,600 cars. In the four-county GLOW region, Genesee County emissions were equal to 1,243 cars, while Livingston County totaled 537 cars. Orleans County had about 425 cars worth of emissions, and Wyoming County was at 1,143 cars worth. Among adjacent counties, Monroe County was estimated to put out as much pollution as 22,499 cars, the largest in the Finger Lakes region and fourth highest in the state. Erie County was at 15,032 cars. Niagara County had about 3,220 cars worth. Ontario County numbered 2,453 cars, and Steuben County was 1,027 cars, according to the report. Health experts say close proximity to emissions like CO2 and the particulates put out by gas-powered engines can pose health threats in the short and long term. These substances are linked to increased incidences of cancer and can cause lung irritation if breathed for a long period of time. For many landscapers, the fumes are part of the job. Gas-powered lawn tools are vastly more inefficient than most large-scale engines. Their small size and typically short-term uses mean they don't have to have the fuel efficiency measures available on vehicle engines, and in many cases simply can't feature those technologies. A gas-powered leaf blower. A gas-powered leaf blower run for a single hour produces as much pollution as 1,100 miles driven in a standard gasoline car, according to data collected by the Colorado Public Interest Research Group. By switching to electric implements, advocates say the issue of fumes would be eliminated, or at least reduced, and relegated to areas around power plants, rather than next to people's homes. It would also eliminate the issue of noise. Electric implements aren't totally silent, but they don't produce any of the engine noise that a typical string trimmer, riding mower, or snowblower would create. Gas-powered landscaping equipment emits a stunning amount of air pollution, not to mention the noise that blights communities across New York. A rebate program will make it easier for New York's landscaping companies and institutional users to transition to cleaner, quieter equipment. Kruger said in a statement, "It's the equivalent of taking hundreds of thousands of cars off the road for a fraction of the cost to the state of existing programs, like the electric vehicle rebate. It's a win for small businesses, workers, communities, and our shared environment." A version of this bill has passed the legislature before, but in 2022, Governor Kathleen C. Hochul vetoed it. In her veto memo, handed down just a few days before the end of the year, she said there wasn't a clear need to incentivize businesses to electrify. The market shift to electric lawn care equipment is already underway, and it is unclear that a rebate is necessary to incentivize either the market or consumers, Hochul said. NYSERDA administered funding through existing resources, including utility ratepayer funds, are committed to existing programs and target more significant energy and emissions reductions. She said any further uses of NYSERDA funding without funding in the budget would be a mistake, so the advocates are asking that she include it in her budget proposal this year. The budget offers Governor Hochul her best opportunity to make New York's air cleaner and communities quieter, said Blair Horner, senior policy advisor for the New York Public Interest Research Group. Using existing state revenues, the governor can establish an incentive program for municipalities and companies to purchase battery-powered equipment. A few dozen local governments have moved to restrict or ban gas-powered lawn equipment on their own, with rules varying from restricting new purchases to outright bans on their use. Most of these are on Long Island and the suburbs of New York City. In the news, woman threw urine onto corrections officer. From Albion, a Holly woman has been charged with a hate crime after allegedly throwing urine from a cup onto a corrections officer at Orleans County Jail. Amanda Clemens Whited, 41, was in custody November 24th at the jail, said Orleans County Sheriff Christopher Bork in a news release. Besides throwing the urine, she also allegedly used racially charged language toward corrections officers and tried to strike one of them. Clemens Whited has been charged after an investigation with felony aggravated harassment of an employee by an inmate and second-degree aggravated harassment as a hate crime. Our dedicated corrections officers work diligently each day to protect and serve Orleans County, Bork said. Incidents of this nature will not be tolerated. And within the Orleans County Jail, will be thoroughly investigated and individuals found responsible will be charged accordingly. Clemens Whitehead was being held at the jail on second-degree criminal contempt charges. She remains jailed and is to appear December 10th in Albion Town Court. Perry Garden Club sets fresh wreath sale. The Perry Garden Club will be selling decorated fresh wreaths on Saturday. The wreaths will be available noon to 8 p.m. at the Community Clothes Closet at 6 North Main Street. Batavia BOE changes meeting to Monday. The Batavia City Schools District's Board of Education meeting has been moved to 5:30 p.m. Monday in the Superintendent's Conference Room. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. CORE lends a hand. Community Resource Room will help with job skill development. Article by Brian Quinn. The new Community Resource Room in the CORE Learning Center will give people access to computers, digital literacy workshops, and private telehealth. Literacy West NY Inc., which is better known as CORE Learning Center, and the Genesee County Chamber of Commerce hosted a ribbon cutting Wednesday. It was for CORE's Community Resource Room, located in CORE's 1 Mill Street location. The Learning Center is a nonprofit organization that serves rural areas and small cities in the region. It provides community-based education, digital literacy, youth development, and workforce readiness programs. Community Resource Room Coordinator Jared Reed said the Community Resource Room will offer access to technology to which they might not have access through digital literacy classes. People who use the technology for their own benefit to join the workforce. We are working on a digital bookings page on our coretolearn.com.org site, he said. The goal is to just make it very streamlined, very simple. You can call us, we can schedule, or you can just book right there. It will populate on our calendars and just make everything easy for everyone. The room has a table with several laptops on it, similar to ones they would have to know how to use, possibly in the workforce. People may get comfortable with steps such as signing into a program, use email, and write a professional email. Regarding staff at the new Community Resource Room, Reed said there will usually be four employees there providing services. State Education Department Office of Adult Education Programs and Policy Director and Supervisor of Occupational Education, Fia Marlissa Johnston, said this is a time to promote teachers and adult education. When you hear a teacher saying, "I'd love to work with children," guess what? If you work with the parents, you are also helping those children, Johnston said. We want to promote the wonderful work of adult education. Our literacy zones are of the partners here, the collaboration. This is exactly what we need at this moment in time. Literacy West NY Inc., Regional Director Steve Warner, said the agency will continue to get a rural health grant, awarded $20,000 renewal for another year. The grant is for telehealth site at 1 Mill Street. Warner said Literacy West is the second year of the grant. The Community Resource Room will be a telehealth site and also a site for the care that Fidelis Care and other partners do there. The telehealth site serves the Finger Lakes region, Warner said. Obviously, it's centered here in the city of Batavia, so Genesee County is front and foremost. But people from the Finger Lakes, is front and foremost, but people from the Finger Lakes region can come to it, he said. Vielle to offer his 2 cents at ACWC. Sculpture exhibition opens Friday at Perry Gallery. An opening reception for sculptor Nicholas Vielle's 2 cents exhibition will be conducted Friday at the Arts Council for Wyoming County. The reception will take place 6 to 8 p.m. at the ACWC Gallery on 31 South Main Street. Vielle was born in 1982 in West Covina, California. He relocated as an infant with his family to Rochester, where he still lives and works. Growing up as the youngest of three children in a family experiencing poverty, He learned early to notice subtleties, value resourcefulness, and appreciate the quiet beauty found in everyday surroundings, ACWC officials said in a news release. Art quickly became an essential outlet, one that provided grounding, identity, and possibility. Vial discovered his voice as a sculptor, drawing inspiration from artists such as Robert Rauschenberg, whose narrative, Assemblages, shaped his early understanding of sculptural storytelling. Vial's graduate studies at the Rochester Institute of Technology introduced him to the material investigations of Mark Quinn, whose casting techniques expanded Vial's approach to form, surface, and physical meaning. Those influences, combined with his training in traditional metalworking, fabrication, and a disciplined clarity of form, allow him to create work that is direct, intentional, and free of unnecessary visual noise. In two sense, Vial continues his exploration of value, memory, and the lives of objects through carefully constructed forms and refined material language. He invites viewers to consider the weight of the stories we carry and the overlooked significance embedded in familiar materials. His work has been exhibited across the Rockport and Rochester region since 2017, and this show marks his first solo exhibition with the Arts Council for Wyoming County. Morganville Church plans hymn sing. From Stafford, the public is invited to participate in an old-fashioned hymn sing at the Morganville United Church of Christ. The gathering will take place 3 p.m. December 20th at 8466 Morganville Road. A soup and dessert supper, along with fellowship, will follow the program in a former one-room schoolhouse. An organ accompanist will lead participants through some of the old familiar hymns people love to sing, church officials said in a news release. A free will offering will be collected to benefit the church's adopted Christmas family. Damaged plant hurts Ford production. Novelis pulling out all the stops to rebuild Oswego County hot mill. Article by Ken Sturtz. After a massive fire damaged the hot mill building at Novelis's sprawling aluminum plant in Scriba in September, the company said it was working 24/7 to bring the mill back online. Industry analysts and locals have watched intently as Novelis has raced to repair the damage and reopen the hot mill that, before a second fire there in November, the company said could be running by the end of the year or early 2026. The intense interest is because Novelis is one of Oswego County's largest employers, with nearly 1,200 workers on the payroll in Scriba. It's also the world's largest supplier of automotive sheet, and the Scriba plant alone produces more than a third of the material used by the U.S. auto industry. Novelis has provided infrequent updates about the progress it is making in bringing various parts of the plant online, and it has shared little about how it is getting by in the meantime, other than saying it is coordinating with other Novelis plants worldwide to source material and minimize disruptions. But according to industry analysts, there is a full court press going on behind the scenes as Novelis uses every tool at its disposal to continue supplying its customers. It's a very crucial plant in the aluminum world, said Kaustub Chekora, an aluminum industry analyst. The plant supplies automotive sheet for numerous automakers, including Toyota, Stellantis, Hyundai, and Volkswagen. But perhaps most importantly, it makes the aluminum used by the Ford Motor Company in the crown jewel of its fleet, the F-150 pickup truck, as well as Ford's super heavy-duty pickup truck series. Those lines have been a cash cow for Ford over the past decade, and the disruption at the Scriba plant has already adversely affected Ford, analysts say. Ford temporarily cut production of some vehicles as a result of the fire and is on pace to lose $1 billion from the disruption to production of its hot pickup trucks. Novelis has been under intense pressure to restart its hot mill and restart production of automotive sheet in Scriba, analysts say. But the Novelis fire likely won't affect Ford or Novelis in the long run, said Matthew Abrams, a senior aluminum analyst at CRU. There is some excess capacity in the domestic aluminum manufacturing system, he said. However, the sheer scale of the Scriba plant's output, it accounts for 30-40% of all automotive sheet production in the U.S., means short-term disruptions are almost inevitable. Overall, that's a lot to lose, Abrams said. Manufacturing automotive sheet is a complex process that begins in the casting house, where raw aluminum is melted down and cast into giant rectangular slabs. Those slabs go on to the hot mill, where machinery rolls it down and makes it into a coil, known as a hot band. That moves on to the cold mill, where it is rolled out into sheets. Finished sheets are usually about 1 millimeter thick, but can be as thin as 0.9 millimeters. The sheets go to a finishing line and through the heat treater, which gives the aluminum alloy added strength. Shandorkar said that because of the hot mill was the only area of the Scriba plant damaged by fire, and Novelis has since brought the rest of the plant back online, it can bypass the hot mill and continue producing some automotive sheet. To do that, however, Novelis needs to find an alternate supply of hot band. There are several options for securing the necessary hot band, analysts say. As one of the world's largest aluminum producers, Novelis has a strong network of other facilities that it can turn to. Shandorkar said the company would likely rely on a plant it owns in Logan, Kentucky, diverting as much hot band as possible from its hot mill and sending it to Scriba. But the Logan plant supplies more than a third of the beverage can market in the U.S., and Shandorkar said it is pretty full with existing products. He said the needs of the Scriba plant will likely take priority. I think they will try and see what they can squeeze out of Logan, Shandorkar said, and as long as they can do that, cost-wise, it will be the least impactful. Novelis also has a plant in Guthrie, Kentucky, that opened in 2020 and serves the automotive aluminum finishing industry, he said, and could use material from that facility as well. Novelis will likely import whatever hot band it can, Shandorkar said, even air freighting coils of aluminum from sister facilities in Europe and elsewhere. With such a large global footprint, Novelis also imports large quantities of aluminum from Korea and Brazil, but President Donald Trump's 50% tariff on aluminum is a potential hindrance, Abrams said. Novelis has probably been having discussions with the federal government since the fire in hopes of getting some relief from the tariff, Shandorkar said. And importing aluminum or cannibalizing another plant's supply isn't as easy as it might seem, because all aluminum isn't created equal. Aluminum used in the automotive industry has a strict qualification process, Abrams said, which limits Novelis' options somewhat. It has to fit their standards, he said, so it's not as easy as cut and paste wherever you can get it from. One of the other problems is that Ford's F-150 isn't a run-of-the-mill vehicle. Other vehicle manufacturers have replaced a few steel components, such as a hood, with aluminum to cut down on weight. But a decade ago, Ford decided it was going to design a new truck from the ground up in aluminum, resulting in significant weight reduction and improved fuel economy. The F-150 is the first time a manufacturer decided to go all in and make a vehicle from all aluminum, Shandorkar said. In 2014, that was remarkably different. He said Novelis adds a pretreatment to the automotive sheet it produces for Ford that it used exclusively by that automaker in its joining process when it assembles various parts for its vehicles, Other automakers, such as GM, don't use a pre-treatment process, he said. Novelis has plants in Germany and Switzerland that make automotive sheet for the European market. Those facilities have some capacity, and Novelis could use them to pull material into the U.S. But while German automakers use a pre-treated process, Schandorker said they use slightly different aluminum alloys and different pre-treatment systems. Diverting aluminum from Europe could still help Novelis supply any German automakers it does business with in the U.S., he said, but it won't help with Ford. Schandorker said that in addition to importing aluminum and sourcing material from its other U.S. facilities, Novelis has likely been buying hot band material or finished product from its competition. Buying hot band would be cheaper for Novelis, he said, because it would continue using its own cold mill and finishing lines in Skriba or elsewhere. Abrams said that when the fire at the Skriba plant happened in September, all of the domestic producers in the aluminum industry came together to try to figure out how to solve the problem. So it's not just a Novelis problem. It's not just an Oswego problem, he said. Everyone is kind of putting their heads together. Most aluminum producers that manufacture automotive sheet also make sheet for the beverage can industry because the process and profit margins are similar, Abrams said. That means domestic aluminum producers might shift their production capacity to the automotive side and away from the canned sheet side and instead import the canned sheet they need. He said it's easier to import canned sheet in the long run. The overriding problem, however, is that there is very limited domestic capacity in the aluminum industry, Abrams said. There hasn't been a new aluminum mill constructed in the U.S. in more than 40 years, he said, though two new ones are coming online, both automotive-focused. There are also only a handful of companies that produce aluminum in the U.S. There was a structural defect in the U.S. for a long time, Abrams said. We did not see a lot of investment on that side of the market. But the Novelis fire is unlikely to cause a huge long-term disturbance in the market, he said. The fact that demand has softened in the automotive industry as consumers have become frustrated with higher car prices will help balance things off, he said. Just how soon Novelis can get its hot mill running again remains to be seen. After the fire in September and a small debris fire occurred at the Skriba plant in October during work to repair the roof of the hot mill building, but Novelis has said fire was minor and it wouldn't affect its timeline for bringing the hot mill online by the first quarter of 2026. Novelis said it was making substantial progress in the rebuilding of its hot mill and even moved up its estimate for restarting it to the end of 2025. But another fire, much larger than the small debris fire in October, occurred at the plant in November, and it's not clear if they will affect the hot mill's reopening. So, hoping for the best that they are indeed on track to have this sorted out by the end of the year, Schandorker said, it is important that the aluminum industry band together to help solve this issue expeditiously. And while Novelis will incur a lot of costs in the short term, the sooner it can get its Skriba plant back up and running, the better, Schandorker said. In the meantime, it will be doing everything it can to keep Ford supplied. Novelis is a strong player in this market, so they will do what they have to do to supply their customer, he said. So basically, they're pulling out all stops to get material back into the system so that they can supply the Ford Motor Company.
You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Albion Police detail Thanksgiving patrol results. Multiple agencies conducted checkpoints. Police agencies in Orleans County have announced the results of their Thanksgiving saturation patrol. Two separate checkpoints were operated, 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. November 26th and 27th in Albion. The patrol was hosted and supervised by the Albion Police Department in conjunction with the Orleans County Sheriff's Office and State Police, with logistical support from the County Probation Department and New York State Parole. Medina and Holly Police conducted separate patrols in their own municipalities in the meantime. More than 100 vehicles passed through the checkpoints overall, with 68 traffic stops conducted. Results included 3 DWI arrests were conducted in Albion. A total of 20 tickets was issued. An arrest for 2 counts of criminal possession of a controlled substance was made in Albion. 3 arrests for aggravated unlicensed operation in Albion. The Albion Police Department and the other agencies involved are committed to making the roadways safe for all those who travel upon them, police said. The number of vehicles stopped and vehicles traveling through the checkpoints were similar to previous years, but police said the percentage of intoxicated or impaired drivers has decreased again from previous years. The data from this year's detail indicates that less than 5% of the motorists stopped were intoxicated, and around 2% of the overall encounters were with intoxicated people. As much as 20% of the motorists involved were intoxicated in previous years, police said. This is positive news in our efforts to reduce accidents caused by intoxicated drivers, police said. The reduction of DWI arrests is a positive and motivating factor when these types of details are conducted. Many believe that law enforcement wants to make more DWI arrests during these details. However, we like to see the opposite. The Albion Police Department and its partners are planning similar details for the future. Pembroke CSD in middle of $36 million project. Article by Brian Quinn. All basketball games at the Pembroke Central School District are on the road as work continues in the junior-senior high school gym as part of a $36 million capital project. The gym is enclosed and weather-tight, Superintendent Matt Calderon said. The rafters are painted in Pembroke's dragon green, and the contractors will soon be installing the basketball backboards and volleyball nets, the superintendent said. The flooring and wall graphics will be among the last parts. Renovation started after the winter season last year, with the new steel superstructure being installed in the summer. It is scheduled to be completed by the end of the winter season. When the junior-senior high school renovation and expansion is done, physical education classes will have far more space to do multiple activities, Calderon said. There will be new lines laid on the floor for pickleball courts and other physical education activities. There will be 2 regulation width practice courts, which will allow more practices at once and decrease the need to have late night practices. Ideally, it would be great to schedule all practices immediately after school, which would create better routines for everyone. And that could even improve academic achievements in general, he said. As it is now, our winter team's practice schedules fluctuate from week to week, with practices ending as late as 9 p.m. Even if we can end all practices by 7 p.m., that would be an improvement, and it would open up gym availability to the PYA, Pembroke Youth Association, and other community organizations. For spectators, there will be ample space between the bleachers and the game court, the superintendent said. The old gym was so narrow that the feet of spectators who sat on the bottom bleachers were touching the court boundary lines. That proximity, along with melted snow from boots, caused safety concerns for the players.
Also, our seating capacity was limited, and the bleachers were packed in like sardines, Calderon said. Our seating capacity will expand, so watching games will be far more comfortable. There are plenty of upgrades that we will leave as a surprise for everyone. To expand the gym, Pembroke used the space from the old locker rooms, so those are completely gone. New locker rooms have been constructed where our old fitness rooms were located, adjacent to the gymnasium, Calderon said. They are framed in with concrete block and plumbing is being installed. Fixtures and finishes will follow after that. The fitness center will be relocated to the basement with community access from what has been known as the tunnel, where the football team exits after a game. Where it exits before a game. During the current phase two, PE, physical education classes, have been relocated to the large part of our library. The IT department moved out of their space, adjacent to the library, to create a small version of our fitness center for PE classes and sports teams to use. Calderon said, unfortunately, there is not enough space to allow community members to use it during this time. The IT, Information Technology Department, moved into the superintendent office space, and I moved into an office space in the CPPS, Office of Pupil Personnel Services, office suite. The first phase of the $35,995,000 project was done in the summer of 2024. The capstone of that phase was upgrading the primary school playground, Calderon said. Phase two is scheduled for completion in September. It includes baseball field drainage, junior-senior high school gym and locker room renovations, fitness center renovations, and installations of a new district-wide phone system. Phase three is scheduled to begin in the spring-summer of 2026. Renovations to junior-senior high school, entry plaza, are incorporated into Phase 3. Phase 3 is scheduled to begin May 2026 and to end by March 2027. It includes pool renovations and spectator addition, high school entry plaza renovations, parking lot repairs, auditorium lighting and upgrades, intermediate school art, music, band room renovations, a new public address blue light communication system in each building, and installation of an ADA compliant ramp at the primary school. The pool tile will be regrouted. Some tile on the pool deck will be retiled and some replaced. A spectator addition will be constructed, Calderon said. We already installed an ADA Americans with Disabilities Act push-button door at one of the corner entrances to the high school. The entry plaza is scheduled to be renovated from May of 26 through August of 2026, hopefully completed before the start of the new school year. Medina business owners bring back Thanksgiving habit. Brothers Sanders, Calera, deliver Thanksgiving meals to first responders. Two brothers who own local businesses in Medina provided Thanksgiving meals for first responders who are required to work on the holiday last week. Nate Sanders, owner of Elite Meal Prep, and his brother Logan Calera, owner of Logan Landscaping, did the same thing last year. Last year we provided more than 150 meals to first responders across the county who could not be with their families because they were serving our community on Thanksgiving, said Sanders. It was our way of saying thank you to the women and men who protect our community. They were so appreciative of the effort that my brother Logan and I wanted to once again be there for the people who are always there for us. The Orleans County Sheriff's Office, Orleans County Sheriff's Jail, Orleans County Sheriff's Dispatch, New York State Police, Medina Police and Fire Department, Albion Police Department, Holly Police Department, and Mercy Ambulance for their personal working on Thanksgiving.
Meals are distributed through the kitchen at the Orleans County Jail. As I have often said, it is never easy for first responders to miss holidays and family events, but we all know that is the nature of the job, said Orleans County Sheriff Christopher Bork. So Logan and Nate are not only providing a tremendous Thanksgiving dinner to our first responders, they are letting them know their commitment and dedication is recognized by the community. The brothers said they also intend to provide meals for first responders working Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From Tuesday, December 2nd of 2025, one of the top stories, two dead after separate crashes. Drivers succumbed to injuries after accidents in Arcade, Wethersfield. Article by Brian Quinn. Two men have died after separate crashes over the past week in Wyoming County. The first crash was reported 6:52 p.m. Wednesday, Wyoming County Sheriff's deputy said. Emergency dispatchers were alerted to a one-car rollover with entrapment on Genesee Road in Arcade. Deputies and rescue personnel found Alfred H. Rex, Jr., 55, of Arcade, outside an overturned Infiniti. Rex told deputies he was eastbound on Genesee Road when a deer entered the road, causing him to swerve. His vehicle went off the road and overturned multiple times. Wyoming County EMS evaluated Rex at the scene, and he refused further medical treatment and transport, deputies said. He was then released to his family. Rex called 911 early Thursday morning for transport to the hospital, deputies said. He was taken to Erie County Medical Center, where he died Thursday from internal injuries he is believed to have suffered during the accident. Arcade firefighters and Wyoming County EMS assisted at the scene. The second crash occurred Friday in Wethersfield, deputies said. Paul E. Pulaski, 82, of North Java, was eastbound about 2:31 p.m. on Wethersfield Road when he lost control due to snow and ice blown over the road, deputies said. His vehicle went off the highway and struck a utility pole at the Poplar Tree Road intersection. Pulaski received immediate life-saving measures at the scene, deputies said. He was transported to Wyoming County Community Hospital, where he was stabilized before being transferred to Buffalo General Hospital. Pulaski succumbed Sunday to his injuries. North Java Fire Department and Wyoming County EMS assisted at the scene. Both crashes remain under investigation. Red Cross offers holiday cooking and decorating advice. Simple steps can help keep people safe, whether cooking or decorating, for the holiday season, American Red Cross of Western New York officials said in a news release. That can range from keeping a close eye on what's cooking to checking holiday lights and decorations for hazards. By taking precautions now, families can help prevent tragedies and enjoy a safer, happier holiday season. One in five people the Red Cross assists after home fires are helped in just the holiday months, said Regional Disaster Officer Ken Turner. Home fires can strike quickly, leaving you with as little as 2 minutes to escape. Help protect your loved ones by practicing your home fire escape drill, unless everyone can get out in less than 2 minutes. Cooking safety tips. Stay in the kitchen when you are frying, grilling, or broiling food. If you must leave the kitchen for even a short period of time, turn off the stove. Use a timer to remind yourself that the stove or oven is on. Avoid wearing loose clothing or dangling sleeves while cooking. Keep kids and pets at least 3 feet away from cooking areas. Keep anything that can catch on fire, pot holders, oven mitts, wooden utensils, paper or plastic bags, food packaging, and towels or curtains away from your stovetop, an oven, or any other appliance that generates heat. clean cooking surfaces on a regular basis to prevent grease buildup. Consider purchasing a fire extinguisher to keep in your kitchen. Always check the kitchen before going to bed or leaving home to make sure all stoves, ovens, and small appliances are turned off. Holiday decorating. December is the peak month for candle fires, which cause about 20 home fires on average nationwide, and heating equipment remains one of the leading causes of home fires. Provide at least 3 feet of space for all heating equipment, Red Cross officials said. That's critical because most home heating fire tragedies occur when flammable items like furniture, rugs, and drapes are too close. In addition, never leave space heaters unattended, since they're involved in most fatal home heating fires, the officials said. If you must use a space heater, place it on a level, hard, and non-flammable surface, such as ceramic tile floor, the officials said. Don't place it on rugs and carpets or near bedding and drapes, and turn it off every time you leave the room or go to sleep. If you must use candles, keep them away from anything that could burn, and place them out of reach from pets and children, officials said. Never leave burning candles unattended. You can also help keep your family safe by testing your smoke alarms monthly and practicing your home fire escape plan until everyone can escape in 2 minutes or less. Visit redcross.org/fire for more information, including an escape plan to practice with your family. Smoke alarms save lives, the official said. Install a smoke alarm near your kitchen on each level of your home. HEAP applications underway in Genesee. Applications are underway for the 2025-2026 Home Energy Assistant Program's regular benefits. The regular HEAP benefit helps eligible households with home heating costs. It may also assist residents experiencing heating emergencies, such as low, no fuel, a utility shutoff notice, or a threat of service termination. To apply in Genesee County, apply through New York State My Benefits at www.mybenefits.newyork.gov. Fill out a paper application available at otda.ny.gov/programs/HEAP. Submit a completed application in person to the Genesee County Department of Social Services. The regular HEAP benefit is scheduled to operate through April 7th or until program funding is exhausted. Genesee County HEAP contacts. The Genesee County Department of Social Services is available at 5130 East Main Street in Batavia. It can also be contacted at 585-344-2580, extension 6524, or genesee.heap@dfa.state.ny.us. The fax number is 585-343-5548. The Genesee County Office for the Aging is available at 2 Bank Street. It can be contacted at 585-343-1611. Both offices are open 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays. From the police blotter, Batavia. A Batavia man was jailed after he injured an officer trying to arrest him on a warrant, Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said. Jacob W. Patterson, 29, was charged with felony second-degree assault and resisting arrest. He was committed to Genesee County Jail. Batavia. A Rochester man faces a drug charge after he was stopped on Park Road for making an illegal U-turn, November 25th. Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said. Amani M. Massey, 28, was charged with misdemeanor criminal possession of a controlled substance for having cocaine. He also was charged with aggravated unlicensed operation and unlicensed operation. Pembroke. A Rochester man faces charges after he refused to get out of his car, which was being towed for having no insurance. Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said Michael H. Cummings, 26, was stopped November 26th on Route 5 for traffic violations. He was found to have no insurance or registration, and his car was ordered towed. Cummings was charged with obstruction of governmental administration and resisting arrest, and is to appear at a later date in town court. Batavia, a Rochester woman faces charges after she stopped for traffic violations on Pearl Street Road, Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said. Ashley R. Hutt, 32, was charged with driving while impaired by alcohol, misdemeanor criminal possession of a controlled substance, open container or use of cannabis while driving, moving from a lane unsafely, and felony aggravated unlicensed operation for being under the influence while driving with a suspended. Stafford. Trisha R. Demmer, 32, of Batavia, was charged with DWI after she was stopped at 1:15 a.m. November 23rd, state police said. She is to appear at a later date in town court. Oakfield. Cameron M. Thomas, 25, faces charges after an investigation into a domestic dispute, state police said. He was charged with criminal obstruction of breathing and criminal mischief for damaging a phone to prevent the victim from calling 911. He is to appear at a later date in town court. Bethany. Zachary M. Burke, 28, of East Bethany, was charged with grand larceny for allegedly stealing a car, state police said. He also was charged with petty larceny and is to appear at a later date in town court. Gaines. Robert F. Taylor, 36, of Albion, was charged with criminal obstruction of breathing after an investigation into a domestic dispute on Thanksgiving, state police said. He also was charged with criminal mischief for damaging a phone to prevent the victim from calling 911. Albion. Ivan M. Borgin, 32, of Oakfield, was charged with welfare fraud, state police said. He was also charged with felony offering a false instrument for filing. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 2nd through 5th of 2025 issue of the Batavia Daily News, serving Genesee, Wyoming, and Orleans counties. Your reader has been Bruce. Thank you for listening. And as always, make it a great day.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the East Aurora Advertiser. At 11 o'clock, we have the Niagara Gazette. And at noon, we have the Dunkirk Observer. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. Radio Reading mails out a large print program schedule to our listeners every other month. If you have not received a Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service large print program schedule in the mail, please call us at 716-821-5555. We will make sure that you receive one every other month. A Braille version of the schedule is also available upon request. Our number again is 716-821-5555. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision,